whole chunk.
This is the State Capitol Report. I'm Joy Cardine. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. It is 8 minutes past 7 o'clock on this Monday, June the 27th. We have a lot of state news to cover in this edition of our State Capitol Report. Coming up in just a little bit, we will be welcoming in Wisconsin Public Radio state government reporter Sean Johnson, who is here to talk about the budget signed yesterday by Governor Scott Walker, as well as a preview the week to come at the state capitol. Governor Walker himself will be with us after 7:30 to talk about what he vetoed and what he didn't veto in the state budget, and we'll ask him what he believes will be the end result of this two-year spending plan that he signed yesterday. So Governor Scott Walker joining us after 7:30. We will also hear from State Senate Minority Leader, Democratic State Senator Mark Miller, who will give us his perspective on the state budget at the end of the hour. But we start with a story that broke over the weekend, a news story that was first reported by Wisconsin Public Radio and the Wisconsin Center for Investigative Journalism. This story involves an alleged physical altercation earlier this month between Supreme Court Justice David Prosser and Justice Ann Walsh Bradley. And Wisconsin Public Radio's news reporter, Gilman Halstead, has been covering this story for us, and he joins us in the studio. Hello, Gil.
Hi, Joy.
What in the world, Gil? We just heard your report, and we heard the comment that is the Supreme Court crazier than the legislature. What is going on?
Well, I think we really are not going to know for sure what went on until we may get some more today from Capitol Police Chief Charles Tubbs, and perhaps some of the sources who have not been willing to name themselves, but who we believe are knowledgeable about what happened, may be willing to say more as this progresses. But we are certain from talking to the sources we have, and the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel has confirmed some of that and added some new perspectives, that there was a physical altercation between Justice Bradley and Justice Prosser. Probably on the 13th of June, the Journal Sentinel is reporting that during an argument in Ann Walsh Bradley's office, where there were other justices present, we think all of them were there except for Justice Crooks, and that they were discussing when to release the ruling that did come out that week about the collective bargaining law and whether or not the legislature had violated the open meetings law. And things just sort of got out of hand, apparently. And one version says that Justice Bradley pointed at Justice Prosser and told him to leave her office, and then he grabbed her around the neck. And other sources say that she rushed at him, and he put up his hands to defend himself, and his hands may have brushed her neck. So it's kind of a... in terms of the reports from the sources we have, a he said, she said kind of thing. We just hope something will come out of it, but it's an indication that it seems to most of the reporters involved in this that things are pretty tense up there. We've known that for a while, but
yeah. And when this story was first reported on Saturday or late Friday. Neither justice was talking at that time. When Wisconsin Public Radio contacted them, they had no comment.
That's right.
But then, since...
Yeah, since Justice Prosser has released a statement, which doesn't really refer to what happened in the incident, but just calling the anonymous claims of what did false in the sense that he says an investigation will prove these allegations false. And Justice Bradley has said a lot more to the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel and confirming that Justice Prosser did grab her around the neck, and she has spoken out against sources who paint a different picture of what happened, saying that's a spin that is not accurate.
Yeah, what I read was that it was a spin to say that somehow her neck ran into Justice Prosser's hands.
That's what she's quoted as saying. Yes.
Yeah. So who looks into this kind of a physical altercation between Supreme Court justices?
Well, they're the two most likely people to do it, and our sources say that they are already looking into it, are the Capitol Police, headed by Chief Charles Tubbs, and he has said he will release a statement about that today. We had tried to talk to him last week, and he said he would not talk about it. Some of our sources say that he actually met with all of the justices soon after this happened, we assume, to talk about it. And the other is the Judicial Commission, which is charged with looking into judicial misconduct, investigating them, and sometimes proposing discipline for what may have occurred. And the issue there is that by statute, their investigations are confidential. They do not reveal whether or not they are investigating until there is an actual outcome of the investigation. Now, that we because of the nature of this one, we may hear sooner from them, at least some skeleton details and an indication that they're looking into it.
Well, so what is the next step, Gil, in this story now?
Well, for reporters, I think everybody's pretty anxiously awaiting this news release from Chief Tubbs, hoping that it will shed some more light on it and give us directions to go in terms of our next reporting on it and when we might expect more official details from the police about it. And beyond that, I think it's it would seem to me that we'll focus more the eyes of the public on the activities of the court when they do meet together, and to see if perhaps the publicity surrounding this will affect their behavior in some way or another. But it's much too early to say, you know, whether someone will be disciplined in some way or not, in one way or another. But I think that that it's going to have an impact on all sorts of other things that are happening, both in the legislature and in the Capitol, as it becomes more known.
Well, Gil, thanks very much for your work on this story. Thanks very much for coming in this morning. More on this this story about the altercation between Justice Prosser and Justice Ann Walsh Bradley coming up during Kathleen Dunn's program after 9 o'clock this morning during her All Things Political segment. She will be talking with Bill Leaders, who is with the Wisconsin Center for Investigative Journalism, who also worked on this story. So stay tuned, as they say. And Gil, thanks very much for being with us. Let me welcome in just very briefly before we take a quick break, Wisconsin Public Radio's state government reporter, Sean Johnson. Sean, is there a lot of buzz at the state capitol over this story? Or I know you were covering the state budget and Governor Walker signing the state budget. Did he have anything to say about this story?
He didn't have anything to say about it. He didn't take any questions after the budget signing. So all we heard from the governor was, you know, in his address about the budget. You did hear from the brothers Fitzgerald, Speaker Jeff Fitzgerald, Majority Leader, Senate Majority Leader Scott Fitzgerald, and Gil quoted Scott Fitzgerald and as his piece that ran at the top of the newscast. But yeah, I mean, it's shocking. It's a shocking story, no matter how it turns out. And it would be shocking, I think, in any state, but just you put it in the circumstances of everything that's happened in Wisconsin. And the fact that this allegedly occurred right before they released the decision, the contentious decision on the collective bargaining bill that kind of started it all, and it just gives it extra weight.
Yep, indeed, jaw-dropping, and I'm sure we'll be covering it more in the days to come. We're going to talk with Sean about other things happening at the state capitol and the budget that was signed yesterday by Governor Scott Walker, and we're going to welcome your thoughts and questions, especially on the budget, at 1-800-642-1234, or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. Checking the weather forecast for today, turning cloudy with thunderstorms likely. Highs today will be in the 60s in the north, getting into the low 80s in the southern part of the state. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Joy Cardine. It is now 18 minutes past 7 o'clock on this Monday, June the 27th. This is our state capitol report, our weekly dose of state politics, where Sean Johnson, our state government reporter, brings us up to date on what's happening at the state capitol, what has happened under the state capitol dome and previews the week to come. The biggest news, I guess, it didn't happen at the state capitol, Sean. It happened in Green Bay yesterday with Governor Walker signing the state budget.
Yeah, and he issued 50 vetoes of the budget, which is a lot. It sounds like a lot, but it's definitely a lot less than, say, Governor Doyle did, even when Democrats were in charge, but especially when Republicans were running the legislature, when he used his veto pen much more extensively. But the governor did make some changes to the budget that he signed yesterday. Largely, though, it's the same plan that he introduced to lawmakers back in early March, and that, you're talking about historically large cuts to areas like education that that you haven't seen before. Mm-hmm. It's a budget that, according to the Legislative Fiscal Bureau, wipes out Wisconsin's structural balance. And that's the point the governor kept coming back to yesterday as he talked about how this budget gets the state's fiscal house in order.
As a state, we could choose to take the easy path and push the tough decisions off and pass the buck on to their generation and future generations. Or we can step up to the plate and make those tough decisions today.
All right, so what were those tough decisions, Sean?
I think that the cuts all around are certainly going to be viewed by some of the public as tough. The cuts to schools, the cuts to technical schools in particular, the cuts to the university, to local governments. I mean, you go on down the line, it was a budget that balanced in most areas based on cuts. I mean, there were some transfers from one fund to another. They did use credit card spending, essentially refinancing state debt that will cost the state more money down the line. But largely, it was a budget that balanced on cuts, and according to that Fiscal Bureau document, is balanced at the end. One thing the governor didn't get away from, signing up in Green Bay at a Green Bay manufacturer, he was still greeted by hundreds of protesters, as everybody who drove into this event to be there and applaud the governor had drive by a line of protesters, including a Green Bay teacher, Eleanor Radue, who said that this budget disregarded education and teachers that had made the state great.
If there's not the room to be the kind of teacher that you aspire to be, you're not going to enter the profession. You're going to go choose something that will help you support your family.
And so there was a pretty heated group out there, and a fairly large group for a Sunday up in Green Bay.
And there had to be a change of venue kind of at the last minute, Sean. It was going to be at one business, and it was switched to another?
Yeah, the first business that the governor chose, the owner of the business had a history of tax evasion issues, and so they changed the location. They said they wanted to keep focus on the budget itself. Mm-hmm. But and this ended up being one of the places where he announced for governor actually yesterday. It had a campaign feel to it, too. I mean, the governor is reading from teleprompter. He's got a giant American flag draped in the background, with a lengthy prepared speech. No questions.
Why? No questions. I'm wondering about that.
The David Prosser news came out over the weekend. That could be a factor, or it could be that they just wanted to keep on the message that they want to keep hitting over and over again. But he didn't talk about any of the vetoes that he made.
Yeah. Well, we're going to have Governor Walker on with us after the news after 7:30. What question did you want to ask him yesterday that I might ask him when he's on with us?
I suppose you could ask him about any of the vetoes that he didn't make. Why not veto that provision that a bipartisan group of lawmakers want to take out that craft brewers say is going to hamper them or is going to hamstring them quite a bit? Mm-hmm. That's one that, there's a number of issues that, Democratic lawmakers are out publicly saying, take this stuff out or Republican lawmakers be a little noise about. But this is one that Republicans and Democrats seem to sign on to, but didn't get the ear of the governor.
Yeah. Well, wasn't there also one that dealt with focus on energy that businesses and environmental groups wanted him to veto, but he did not?
That was one, I didn't read about that prior to coming in here, but mm-hmm. that is one that the Joint Finance Committee added earlier this year, basically, that it reduces states' investment in renewable energy, essentially.
Mm-hmm. Well, what is, Sean, I guess the... I don't know if there is such a the most significant part of this this state budget that that starts July 1st, right?
Well, I mean, one of the most significant parts is not in this budget. It's the part of the budget repair bill that the Supreme Court just upheld. That at least that first legal challenge to. There's another one filed in federal court, but that's that kind of works hand in hand with this budget and. And that's going to be a big change in that you got hundreds of thousands of employees or going on a couple hundred thousand employees who are going to have union bargaining rights that are going to be, 50 years old that are essentially going to be scaled back, mostly taken away. Coming up here Wednesday of this week is when the Secretary of State says he's going to publish that law. Effectively, it's basically in effect now, but the Secretary of State's going to publish it on Wednesday, and there will be no doubt. And then when the fiscal year begins, that's when those the savings that are recognized through that plan take effect. And that's what the governor and Republicans have talked about is the tools.
Yeah. Well, we are. We should point out that Sean and I are both public employees and are affected by those changes. That are going to be taking place. Let me also ask you, though, Sean, in the this budget was, you say, balanced largely on cuts, lots of cuts to local governments and to local schools and other areas. However, there were some increases in spending, were there not?
Overall increasing. I mean, spending did go up. Overall, this budget spent more than Governor Jim Doyle's budget. Most of that went toward Medicaid, the state's health care programs, and, like Badger Care, stuff like that, senior care. When it comes to Medicaid, there's really not much the state can do in some situations to curb spending. I mean, they're in a partnership with the federal government on a program like that, they have to spend, they have to have a maintenance of effort, they have to keep supporting these programs. And so, that is one area where the Walker administration, most of the new money went to that. Transportation also did well in this budget. And transportation, you've got a shift of money from the state's general fund, where it pays for schools, stuff like that, to the transportation fund in this budget. And that's a permanent shift of money that used to go to the general fund through sales tax on vehicle sales. That's going to be starting this budget phased in. And going toward the roads budget, so that's one area that did better.
Mm-hmm. Well, in our last few minutes, is there anything else in terms of the vetoes he made or didn't
The vetoes. I mean, there were some interesting ones in there that he did make. He eliminated bail bondsmen. That's something the Republicans had put in there in the Joint Finance Committee. He eliminated anti-smoking groups had said would be effectively a tax cut for name brand chewing tobacco. He raised the income threshold for no-bid contracts for all state agencies, meaning that for contracts that cost up to, I think, $50,000, you can do no bid. He kept ethics statements more accessible by the public through a veto. That's something that the Finance Committee had put restrictions on, accessing those statements. So, there is definitely stuff in there that these are some of the hot button issues, that came up. But in terms of like big, larger structural changes, getting rid of the earned income tax credit, getting rid of that tax increase, if you want to call it. And of course, that's always going to be argued. But if you want to make changes to the earned income tax credit for working poor, that's still in there. 1 week waiting period for people to get unemployment benefits after they lose their job, that's still in there. Those are areas where he decided not to go.
Yeah. Well, what is going to be happening this week at the state capitol?
The Capitol building is supposed to be open today and in all 8 entrances, which, given the way that the year's gone, that's a fairly monumental event and one that a lot of people said it should have been done a while ago, but for several months now, it's been under limited access, and people have had to go through metal detectors. But in working with an advocate for the court, basically the state and attorneys for unions have got the, you know, they've basically agreed that they'll have all eight doors open now. And then also the Government Accountability Board is going to meet today to discuss challenges to four GOP nomination papers in the recall elections. You know, there's generally challenges to those types of petitions.
Yeah. As it stands right now, the recall primaries will take place on July 12th?
July 12th.
Yeah.
For the six, in the primaries where there's six senators up for recall, there are going to be Democratic primaries there. Well, you know, with fake Democrats and the like.
So just a minute or so to go here, Sean, is the governor going to be signing the concealed carry legislation that passed?
I would assume you certainly welcome to ask him, but that's something that I have not heard a firm statement from him that he will just yet. But he said that, you know, he's spoken broadly about support for concealed carry, no matter what form that bill takes. So, you know, you would assume he would, but I haven't heard him come out and say it.
And now that the budget's done, do lawmakers have anything to do?
Yeah, the redistricting map is the next big thing, I'd say. And the question now is whether they come back and do that, because the Journal Sentinel has reported that a map is being circulated, that lawmakers are getting a chance to see this map, though the rest of us haven't gotten a chance to. The question now is whether Republicans come back and try to deal with that map before the recall elections.
Sean, thanks very much. We'll talk to you next week, we hope. Sean Johnson, Wisconsin Public Radio state government reporter. We're going to be welcoming in Governor Scott Walker after we check the latest news. This is the State Capitol Report. I'm Joy Cardine. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. It is now 7:36 on this Monday, June the 27th. We are very pleased to have with us Governor Scott Walker. Governor Walker signed the Wisconsin's newest two-year budget yesterday, calling it a document that makes hard choices to balance the books for the first time in years. And he joins us by telephone. Good morning, Governor Walker.
Good morning. Good to be with you.
Thanks very much for joining us. I want to talk mostly about the budget, but I have to ask you your reaction to the reports of the physical altercation between Justices Prosser and Bradley that we heard about over the weekend.
Yeah. No, an extremely serious allegations, and one that hopefully this week law enforcement will be able to investigate and get to the bottom of. But no matter what, I mean, you've got obviously competing views on what may or may not have happened there. But what it says to me is, one, we have to get to the bottom of it, and law enforcement professionals obviously should be involved in trying to figure that out. But secondly, even if the truth is somewhere in between there, no matter which part of that story is accurate, what it suggests overall is that there's some real troubles that I think are very serious in terms of the relationship and conduct in the Supreme Court, and that certainly has to be resolved. In a free society, there's got to be confidence in the judiciary, and certainly the fact that there's that kind of tension there I don't think is healthy for anybody.
Yeah. Do you take any responsibility for the conflict on the Wisconsin Supreme Court?
No, in this case, my understanding is many of these issues have been around for years, recently. But these are larger issues that have got to be resolved, and it goes beyond just a specific item here or there, is my understanding.
Yeah.
Certainly, in this case, again, what's alleged, at least, is very, very serious.
Yeah. It's related, and we will talk about the budget, but we had a listener from Ashland email this statement. He said that there is more divisiveness and polarization in this state now than he can ever remember. And he's wondering if you have any regrets.
No, well, my regrets are that that some of the groups that came in nationally have tried to make it such. I mean, the bottom line is, in the past, we've taken on many issues in this state that where people have very strong feelings one way or the other. In fact, if you look, even the last few presidential races in 2000, 2004, were very much a split state politically. In fact, you know, all the national pundits talk, even going into 2012, and look at a handful of states across the country where there's a very even balance between Republican and Democrat voters. So what we're talking about here is not new. What is frustrating, and one of the things, if I had to do it over, I'd spend more time making the case early on. I came in and I guess took much more of a small business owner type approach. We saw a problem, we identified a solution, and we acted on it. But I would challenge people, when I've talked about this one-on-one, even with groups like teachers I've met with around the state and schools, and sometimes people will ask a similar question. And I'll point out, from February 11th on, from the time that I first started talking about our reforms, I've continuously talked about my respect for the more than 300,000 public servants in the state. I've talked about not only those who work for state government, I've talked about the fact that my kids go to public school and the respect I have for teachers. I've talked about respect for other local officials, like the ones I worked with in the past as a county official. People have every right to agree or disagree with the proposals we put out there, but if you look at the language and the attacks and the other things that people brought in, those have largely been from people and groups and organizations coming in from elsewhere who, unfortunately, I think more than anything, are pushing the polarizing rhetoric in all this. We're talking about what it takes to put the state back together, what it takes to put it back on a fiscal track, and I think what you see, and even yesterday talking about, now it's time to take the next step forward, to turn the page on this budget battle, and to start focusing again, as we did early in this year, on things that I think Republicans, Democrats, and independents can agree on, and that is the need to get more people working in the state of Wisconsin.
So what is the very best thing, if there is a best thing, of the budget you signed yesterday?
Well, I think a couple things. I think certainly the fact that we took a $3.6 billion deficit, and that's about $640 for every man, woman, and child in terms of what their piece of the deficit would be, and turned it into a slight surplus. That's the first time in more than a decade and a half that we have a truly balanced budget that doesn't push off a structural deficit into the next budget cycle. That's important because I've got two kids, a junior and a senior. I know for people who wrote and emailed and called and talked to me over the last several months, there's a lot of people out there concerned about the next generation and the bills and the debts that they're inheriting. In this budget, we're giving them a budget without passing on those big debts. Along the way, at a time when a lot of people are hurting, we're doing more to help generate more interest in creating jobs in this state. And we're freezing property taxes, an issue that for a lot of people who are on the verge of foreclosure and who are finding it tough, whether it's a retired couple on a fixed income or a new family just starting out with daycare payments and, you know, just barely being able to pay the bills, in each of those cases, massive increases in property taxes would be devastating for them, and this budget freezes those.
Yeah, anything in the budget that concerns you?
Well, I mean, long-term for us, we need to make sure, again, that I'd like to do even more beyond just what's in the budget in terms of job creation. That, for me, is the single most significant issue I hear from people across the state. It's why we acted so quickly in the special session in January and February on doing things that got a greater interest for small businesses and other job creators to put people to work. But we'd like to do even more, and I think going into the fall session, it's one of those things where in that special session, the first 35, 40 days of the session, we had not only Republicans, not only the one independent from Manitowoc, but many Democrats voting for those measures, because I think when it comes to the economy, again, it's not Republican or Democrat jobs, they're Wisconsin jobs, and that's where we need to continue to work.
Yeah. Talk about, if you will, why you vetoed what you vetoed generally. I know you made 50 of them.
Yeah, I mean, obviously, a good chunk of what I laid out early on fiscally, I didn't have to go in and do the kind of vetoes that, for example, Governor Thompson did in the past, because, as I mentioned, the budget did not raise taxes, it did not increase the structural deficit, it actually lowered debt. So those things were good. We took out one earmark. There was only one identifiable earmark in that. We vetoed that out. But overall, the earmarks, the raids on segregated funds like the transportation or patient compensation fund that were done in the past were not done in this budget. But we did take out things, for example, a provision regarding police pay in Milwaukee that I didn't think was appropriate in the budget. I did take out things like bail bondsmen. I didn't think that creation was appropriate, particularly without the time for a state agency to be prepared to regulate an entity like that and have a full discussion about it. I did make a change, for example, in the University of Wisconsin campus press house, a nonprofit faith-based entity that provides housing and assistance for college students. They had taken away the tax exemption there, and we removed that provision. We thought it was appropriate for them to have that kind of access. And even things as simple as there was a change made in the Joint Finance Committee on how to tax chewable tobacco and to move to a weight-based system. And my concern was that that would make those products, those particular products that advocates were pushing for, more accessible to children. And to me, I didn't want to have that happen. I wanted to side with a number of the health organizations that felt that the current system was better off for our children in the state. So weren't a ton. Again, 50 is a pretty modest number, but many of those were affecting things that we just thought were policy items that either didn't belong in the budget or policy items I just flat out disagreed with.
What about this provision that craft brewers say will hurt them dealing with beer distribution in Wisconsin? They wanted you to veto that provision. You did not. How come?
I did not. I actually looked at the details of that, and it's interesting. For the talk about it, it really didn't match up with the facts that are in the provision. For example, prior to signing the budget and the law yesterday, brewers in Wisconsin were capped off at 50,000 barrels a year production before they'd have to go to a wholesale provider. The measure, the language that was included in the Finance Committee actually ups that number from 50,000 to 300,000. So actually a craft brewer, a microbrewer that's growing will actually be able to expand more freely under this provision. There were a couple things in there that really are ultimately about keeping companies like InBev, which bought Anheuser-Busch, from coming in and doing what they've tried to do in other states, and muscle out companies like Miller Coors. But overall, it grandfathers in the privileges that small brewers have for things like restaurants and their serving. And I think in the end, if people look at the facts, they'll realize that it'll actually be beneficial in many ways by going up from 50,000 to 300,000 for craft brewers out there.
I know we only have you for a short amount of time, but talk about the veto requested by Democrats regarding this earned income tax credit for working families, reducing that credit. They say, and others say, that really amounts to a tax increase for working families.
Well, it's not the earned income tax credit. Actually, a number of folks, depending on the category, will fare better on it. But particularly for the category of individuals who right now, you look at part of that credit goes to individuals who do not have a tax liability. So it's actually taking money from other taxpayers who are working and pay their taxes. And even if those individuals aren't making enough to have a tax liability, it's giving them money on top of that. So it's redistributing things out there. What we decided was, instead of taking more of that money and putting it there, what we did instead, not only there, but with a number of other changes and modifications we made, we took the savings we had from those categories and put it into Medicaid. We added $1.2 billion more into the Medicaid programs, which are to fund things like Badger Care, Family Care, Senior Care. In fact, nearly all the new revenue growth over the next 2 years goes into those social services, which are a basic safety net for needy families, for children, and for seniors in the state. And we thought that's where the focus should be on.
Yeah. I know we have to let you go, but are you going to be signing that that bill legalizing concealed weapons in Wisconsin this week or sometime soon?
Probably after Independence Day. We haven't set a specific date, but it was critical for me, as I mentioned a few weeks before they passed, that they have both the permit, in particular the training provision, in. I was actually talking with a state senator from Milwaukee today about other provisions in the budget, and interesting, a Democrat, but who voted for the measure. She represents the Northside Central City District and felt very passionately that as long as there was training and a permit requirement, that gave her citizens the right to carry and be able to do so not only legally, but with the training they need. That's exactly what this bill will do, and I'll be happy to sign it.
Thank you very much for being with us.
Good to be at the joint.
Scott Walker, governor of the state of Wisconsin. We will talk with Mark Miller, who is the Senate Minority Leader, after a quick pause and a quick check of the weather. Turning cloudy today, thunderstorms likely, highs in the 60s in the north, the 70s in central Wisconsin, and getting into the low 80s in the southern part of the state. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Joy Cardine. You are tuned to our state capitol report. We just heard Governor Walker talk about the state budget that he signed yesterday. Now we will get another perspective on that with Senator Mark Miller, who is a Democratic state senator from Monona, the Senate Minority Leader. He joins us by telephone. Good morning.
Good morning, Joy.
So what is your reaction to what the governor vetoed or didn't veto yesterday in the state budget that takes takes place starting July 1st?
Well, the Finance Committee didn't make that many changes to the budget as was originally introduced, and the governor's vetoes were fairly minor in nature. The Democrats' objection to the budget was its structure from the very beginning. The budget cuts the programs that benefit primarily the middle class and working families and children, and also seniors in the state. What it does is it gives more to those who already have a lot in our state, and it takes from those who have less. And here's how it does it. It provides additional tax giveaways to the corporations and the wealthy, and those who are in the middle class or at low-income folks have to pay more. And I heard the governor talking about that there were no tax increases, but in fact the Fiscal Bureau has pointed out that there's nearly $70 million in tax increases. And it's on working families through the Earned Income Tax Credit reductions and on seniors through the Homestead Credit reductions. There's an additional $107 million tuition increase for UW System students, and there's a total of $111 million in total fee increases. And so we just think that's the wrong priority, to take from those in order to provide more for corporations and the wealthy in our state.
Yeah. What about the explanation that the various tax breaks or credits for businesses is going to have them create jobs in Wisconsin?
Well, you know, one of those tax breaks is a health security health savings account. That's not in the budget. It was done in the special session. But you know, that doesn't do anything to create to create jobs at all. It's just a tax benefit. It's basically a tax credit. And I'm sure that if that was taken away, those folks would say, well, that's a tax increase, just like this is a tax decrease for those folks that can benefit from it. We have provided, particularly since the recession hit us, a considerable amount of incentives to create jobs. And the economy is recovering slowly. If you want to create jobs, though, the way you really do it is through investing in education, and this budget makes a huge cut to education. $1.6 billion in public and K-12 funding total. That's a combination of all the funds removed from public education. It provided it cuts technical colleges by 30%, and training the workforce is an absolutely essential part of getting people back to work. We have companies in Wisconsin that want to hire people, but they don't have the trained workforce to be able to do it. It requires a specialized training. Cutting technical colleges, it was a real blow to helping get people back to work. And in addition to which, there's the $250 million cut to the University of Wisconsin system. So I think the priorities are wrong in terms of getting people back to work is where we need to do is invest in the workforce.
Yeah. The governor says that those cuts to education are essentially paid for by the collective bargaining changes.
Well, that's another example of trying to create balanced budgets on the backs of working men and women. And that's something that we strongly object to, is that even in the municipalities have indicated that that these are not sufficient to make up for the cuts that the state has made in shared revenue. And these cuts affect the low income areas of the state more so than the wealthy areas of the state. Those areas, particularly in the rural parts of northern Wisconsin, the rural parts of Wisconsin are going to see the effects even more dramatically, and that includes the schools in those districts.
Yeah. The governor made reference that he hopes now that the budget battle is over, the budget is signed, it's time to move on and work on what really matters to the state of Wisconsin, and that's getting Wisconsin working again. And he thinks that that now both parties can work together to do that. What do you think?
Well, it's absolutely essential that that we get people back to work. This having a large unemployment is it hurts the economy. Wisconsin, when Governor Walker took over, had a better unemployment rate than the national average. We're at about 2 percentage points better, and so. You know, in fact, the governor inherited a state in better financial state than the average of the other than the rest of the country.
Mm-hmm. Let me take a call for you from Barb in Blue Mounds. Hello, Barb.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call. I'm a teacher in Verona, and obviously unhappy with what's going on. And what I wondered was two things. One, my brother and I, who's a history professor in Illinois, he feels like their state is just one step away from this, too. And he wanted to know where the hostility is coming from, how he looks for the larger trends. We were looking at misogyny, primarily attacking professions where women are traditionally employed, like teaching and nursing, and excluding firemen and policemen. We were looking at class warfare, but when we looked at class warfare, we thought, really, what does the upper class or the wealthy class in our country, what is the benefit in decimating the middle class? Because once the middle class does not have the income levels they used to have, the financial support in terms of taxes will be gone, and where will they go? Secondly, The question I have is, are there any real savings to the communities to have educators and union, previously union workers, getting paid less? I'm a teacher, and most of my friends have put off now. They will not be looking for cars. They will not be looking for new homes. They are not going on vacations.
Thank you very much, Barb. We have just a couple of minutes to go. Senator Miller, your reaction to Barb's concerns?
Well, Barb puts her finger on a very important economic fact, and that is that businesses do well when there are customers, and customers buy things when they have the money to purchase things and to invest in their family's well-being. And if you try to squash down the middle class by reducing their wages and reducing their ability to be able to negotiate for a better situation for their family, you actually hurt businesses, and that is what's going to be happening. Paul Wellstone said, "We all do better when we all do better," and that's exactly right. Henry Ford understood this, and Henry Ford was no bleeding heart liberal. But he understood that he needed to pay his workers an adequate wage so they could purchase his cars. And I think it's very short-sighted when we fail to do that.
I would wonder if we have just a minute to go. I wanted to ask you if you had a reaction to or were concerned about the story that broke over the weekend regarding the physical altercation between Justice Prosser and Justice Bradley.
Well, it's an extraordinary story. And, I cannot imagine a workplace environment where somebody would actually physically assault a coworker. And to take place in the Supreme Court, one of the most exalted institutions in the entire state, is just absolutely shocking. And, it's almost beyond belief such an event would happen. And we'll just have to see what the facts are on it. But to contemplate that such an event ever occurred is, I think, shocking to everybody in Wisconsin.
We have less than 30 seconds to go. Do you feel as though the polarization in this state is going to heal?
You know, eventually we will have to heal, and Wisconsin has a tradition of working things out. But currently we have a governor and the majority in the legislature who have taken the road of dividing our state so badly. And any normal politician would have found a middle road to find a way to not put us down this place where we've divided our state. And I think that's the real failure in leadership.
Thank you very much for being with us.
You're welcome.
Senator Mark Miller, Democratic State Senator from Monona and the Senate Minority Leader. Thanks to Rob Ferret and to Bill Martins and to Cynthia Schuster for producing the hour. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network.